Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
If you want to buy a short-term rental in one of the best vacation markets in America, you're looking for the Short-Term Shop. They are the experts in the vacation rental space. Their team of realtors are fantastic. And if you use the Short-Term Shop to buy your home, you'll have access to free classes with me to teach you how to get your property up and running. Join us at theshorttermshop.com, brokered by eXp.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. So I know you guys like to talk about other types of businesses besides just short-term rentals, because a lot of us are like, all right, I've got a lot of real estate. I want to buy some other types of businesses. And we have John Austinson, the founder and CEO of FranBridge, a franchising company, to talk to us about different types of franchises. And I think I would love to buy a franchise, but I don't know what. Not food, I know that. But other than that, I've got a lot of questions. Super excited to interview you. So thanks for coming on, John.
Yeah, no, appreciate you having me. And we certainly need the food guys, but I focus in on what I call non-food franchising. That's the title of my book, and I look forward to digging in with you.
Awesome. So yeah, first tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, how you got into this business, what kind of franchises you started with or have now. Let's hear all of it.
Yeah, no, appreciate it. Based in Atlanta, Georgia, we work with clients all across the country. My background, like so many of your listeners, is, I came up through the corporate world, had a good run, but wanted to do something a little more entrepreneurial. Had the opportunity to step away from a public company into a private company and run the day-to-day operations for a business called Shelf Genie. That's custom pull-out shelving for your kitchens and pantries. And so ran the home office supporting all of our franchise owners across North America. Fell in love with the franchise model. I just saw how so many backgrounds could get plugged into business ownership. Long story short, spun off with the founder. We invest in franchises ourselves across different industries. I think I've got 5 total at the moment. But most of my time is spent helping others, entrepreneurs and investors, get plugged in. We work with about 600 different franchise brands, really all of those that are in growth mode. And, love getting out there and educating and helping, in particular, real estate investors get plugged in. I'd say probably 75% of our clients also invest in real estate. So I think there's a lot of overlap and synergy between the two.
Interesting. Yeah. And I think because it's a very kind of real estate's kind of like the gateway drug into other types of entrepreneurship, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. It's the same basic idea of you're building your own empire, not someone else's, right? And so you're building the cash flows, you get the tax benefits of having an active, in this case, active income. And then you're also building an asset that's going to have long-term value. So a lot of synergies between the two. And I think in particular right now, the wave of real estate investors that we see coming over, they're saying, hey, there's not a lot of inventory out there. Interest rates are high. Would love to diversify my portfolio as well. And I see needs in the market. And maybe that's things that directly correlate to my real estate holdings, or maybe things that help me diversify from those.
So now my next question. I've been in the bar business. My husband owned a bar. I didn't own it. I worked in it after he owned it. It wasn't like that. And he always says, I will never get back into the bar or food and beverage industry ever again. So what makes you say non-food?
Yeah. Again, we need the food guys. We certainly, CEO of Chick-fil-A here in Atlanta is a good friend of mine. We need those guys, and I appreciate them. I just think that there are easier ways to make money. That's my humble belief. Opportunities that require less capital investment on the front end, oftentimes fewer employees, maybe better operating hours, less susceptible to customer whims, and trends, and also higher margins. In food, you do have a degree of waste. And so, again, if you own 50 Jimmy John's, there are a lot of people that do very well, but I think especially with some of the newer brands out there, it's just a little riskier versus some of these other opportunities that we like to work with.
Okay, that makes sense. And I get it. It's just people get so, and rightfully so, so angry about food experiences. I mean, this isn't a franchise thing, but I live in a small town. A lot of my friends own small businesses and restaurants. And, one person going on Yelp and leaving a review because they felt like the server tone of voice was not what they wanted it to be on the one day. It's just horrible. And it's like, oh, this was too salty or this was too whatever. And I don't think that's something I could deal with as an owner. Anyway, it's not about that. So let's talk about the pros and cons of buying a franchise versus starting a company from scratch, because I think a lot of real estate investors are like, yeah, I'm going to go off to the races, start all these companies. And for me, I'm getting to the point where I'm an elder millennial, about to be 36. I'm kind of tired. Like, I did all my busting through walls. I've started, real estate companies, mortgage companies, and I'm just tired of trial and error. I know how to do it, but I'm tired. Just tell me what to do. I can execute it. You know, just tell me what to do. Is that kind of what the franchise model is, or how does that work?
Yeah, no, I like the way you described it more than how I will. But, I think that, you know, some people are too entrepreneurial. I'm a member of the Entrepreneurs Organization. A lot of existing business owners come to me and say, hey, we want to buy a franchise for our next rodeo. And, you know, for some of them, I have to tell them, hey, you're too entrepreneurial. It's not the right fit for you. You want to put your thumbprints all over it. But others say, hey, I've been there, done that. Kind of like you said, I'd much rather start on third base, to be cliche, where a lot of the hard work's already been done and the model's been proven out. And we know that it can be profitable because we've seen it in other markets. And now we have a playbook to go execute against. So, you know, as I think about the benefits of franchising, you know, it would be you have a playbook, you know, what to go execute on from day one. You've got a franchisor on the sidelines that essentially is a coach. The better you do, the better they do. And they're kind of guiding you. Granted, just like any industry, not every franchisor is created equal. There are good ones. There are ones I wouldn't want to be associated with. So that's where we come in to help our clients. But, oftentimes it gets overlooked, but other franchisees in the system, oftentimes you're on a weekly call with them or at least a monthly call, exchanging best practices, exchanging learnings. You know, you're all building the brand together, so you're incentivized to help each other. Obviously, you can get some better pricing, whether it be around product or, you know, in the supply chain or even services, because you're buying in bulk. You're also, this gets overlooked too. From day one, you've got a somewhat optimized marketing system because the franchisors open locations in other areas. They know what works in those early days and then how to build off of that. So, it's just, I'd say a lot of efficiencies in there. And, a lot of our clients will build up a portfolio. I call it franchise stacking, a portfolio of different franchises, or maybe even franchises and existing businesses or rental homes. One thing that's interesting, I'll finish with this, is when you look to sell the business down the line, you want to have that exit. Franchises actually trade at a higher multiple on average versus non-franchises in like-kind industries. There's been a lot of research around this. And so I think if you're a potential resale buyer down the line, you like the idea of getting into a franchise where if you're paying a premium for that business, you want to know that you've got support on the sidelines, from day one.
Okay. So I think I'm going to backtrack a little bit because we got one question that I forgot to ask and then we'll circle back. So why do you think that so many real estate investors end up buying franchises of some sort? What makes a real estate investor a good candidate for something like this?
Yeah. First, I would say it's the mindset. It's the idea of, again, creating income streams, getting tax advantages around that asset. I mean, the tax code's written to support those that own real estate and own businesses. That's what the government incentivizes because that's what they need and want. So a lot of tax benefits there. And then you're building an asset that's going to have exit value down the road. So I think there's the mindset piece, but then there's a lot of the day-to-day. So if you're managing, a fleet of Airbnb locations, you're paying other service providers to come in, and whether that's to clean them or do repairs or roofing or flooring, even dumpsters if you're doing a renovation. You see these other suppliers making money. It's like, wait a minute, why can't I go do that for my own units, but then also maybe for others because I've got this network of others that are in the real estate game. So sometimes it can be a direct correlation. I've had real estate brokers go out and buy property management businesses. I've had clients get in everything from dumpsters to gutters to insulation. That's a $50 billion market, insulation is, without a whole lot of brand awareness, right? And so, big opportunity there. And so they love these different niches. Alternatively, it could be that they say, hey, I'm more on the commercial real estate side and I've got some square footage that's coming available that I think, I'd like to fill. And rather than bringing in a tenant, how about I build that business myself if I'm already going to be at the property and it makes sense? So, different approaches, but I think there's just so much overlap. And again, probably 75% of our clients invest in both.
It's really interesting. And I totally see why. All of that makes perfect sense to me. So let's talk about the different types of franchises that are available out there. So we talked about food. We're not talking about food. We don't want to do food and beverage, but let's talk about the other types. So what are the maybe some favorites that your clients end up getting into?
Yeah, to paint a picture of the landscape out there, and I started painting it there with some property services. You know, I'd say home and property services, some of those categories I just mentioned, that's been wildly popular over the last couple of years. And I'd say most of our real estate investors are getting involved there, from a percentage
something
standpoint.
They know a little bit, right?
Exactly. It's understandable. It's relatable. It's not going out of style anytime soon, right? I'd say industries like health and wellness, and that can mean a lot of different things. There are a lot of different kind of businesses that would roll up under that. You know, automotive. Areas where we've seen a whole lot of growth recently are things that I would call recession resilient industries. And that's, people will always spend money regardless of the economy on things they care about: their kids, their pets, their aging parents, to some degree, their health, their homes. And so businesses under those broad umbrellas, I think, stand to do well. Non-sexy is the new sexy. It's non-trendy. That's what people want. They want boring, understandable businesses. And, there are some that are a little, maybe fashion forward, if you would. I think of Men's Testosterone. There are men's health clinics out there that, these have just been selling right and left. I mean, most markets are sold out. Where you are in Florida, all of Florida is sold out for the one that's been the most popular one here of late. Men's health, very intriguing. I think we did 12 deals last year just in the senior space, senior care, where they take a different approach. It's a better mousetrap to that model. Youth soccer, I think we had 7 or 8 clients buy into that last year around the country.
Interesting. Tell me about that. I'm an ex-soccer player.
Absolutely. Great community involvement opportunity with really good cash flow, with private equity backing, all the technology systems in place. They've been doing it for many years, and they complement current soccer leagues. So it's not that you're coming in competing with them, but oftentimes you complement them with lessons and camps and clinics. And, in some cases, if there's not a league, they can actually create a league. From a labor market standpoint, there's so many people having an interest in working with kids and, in soccer. So I think a lot of part-time employees too with that one. So people like those service-based models where they're very scalable, just like property services. I mentioned insulation being, one there. Most people can't name an insulation company. Maybe they can name one, but that's a $53 billion a year market, both residential and commercial. And, stands to do very well, whether you're trying to reduce energy cost or it's new construction. And, we've placed quite a few clients there, and it's all different walks of life. I mean, we've had doctors buy in, we've had lawyers, we've had a lot of existing business owners, but then a lot of W-2s that say, hey, tired of building someone else's business, I want to build my own. And what's interesting is some of these will go in and run the business full time. In some cases, they'll hire a manager from day one and run it what we call semi-absentee.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. So I have two main questions surrounding that. We're going to start with cost. So I think the very next thing that people are going to say, well, what can I get into for the least amount of money, or what can I get into for the most amount of money? And is there a correlation to how successful you might be depending on the cost of the franchise?
Yeah, there's probably some correlation, but it really comes down to the opportunity. It comes down to the opportunity and the owner.
Did you know that we're officially back in a buyer's market? That's right. Even though interest rates continue to rise, they are causing prices to fall. So there's finally room for you to do regular real estate investor things that we couldn't do for so long, like gasp, negotiate, make lower offers, ask for sellers to cover some of your closing costs. So it's a really great time to buy in terms of being able to get a lower purchase price and being able to negotiate. So if you're looking for your first or next short-term rental, it's a perfect time to reach out to us at The Short-Term Shop. Let our team of agents in any of our true vacation market destinations help you find the perfect investment. Jump on over to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected to get started. We are brokered by eXp Realty. See y'all over there.
This episode is brought to you by the premier short-term rental Facebook group, Short-Term Rental Long-Term Wealth. We have nearly 50,000 members. This is the biggest independently owned and operated SCR Facebook group, and it has been curated by yours truly, Cashflow Carl. join us on Facebook. Search the groups for Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth. That's Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth on Facebook.
When I was at Shelf Genie, I looked across our franchise owners all across North America, who were our top performers, who were middle of the pack, who were the ones that were a little bit behind. Our top performers were the ones that were good with people, and they were willing to follow the system. They didn't come in day one and say, hey, I want to be the smartest guy in the room. Instead, they said, hey, there's a reason why I bought into a franchise. I'm going to follow the playbook. So again, it comes down to those pieces. But no, from an investment standpoint, certainly we have seven-figure placements here and there, but a lot of our clients are getting into things where if you look at the franchise fee, the startup cost, and maybe like 3 months of working capital all built in, oftentimes you're in the 150 to 300 range. That's where a lot of businesses fall. Some clients are using cash to fund it. Some are using maybe 50,000 in cash plus an SBA loan. A lot of our real estate investors like the idea of leveraging. Some are using an old retirement plan and rolling that over through what's called a ROBS program. Of course, Some use a HELOC or a margin loan. So a lot of different ways to get into the game. And we've got funding partners to help our clients, you know, all along the way.
Okay, so you guys have partners, not necessarily in-house, but recommendations for like, okay, I want to finance this. I don't want to spend my whole $300,000 in cash to start this thing up, but you know, you can make a down payment and pay that back.
Yeah, no, we have outstanding partners. On the funding side, we've got franchise attorneys we bring in to review the agreements with our clients. We've got a coach, a client of ours who, you know, it's now up to 6 franchise brands, 30 territories, $35 million a year in revenue. He loves coaching. So we actually pay him to coach our clients once they're launching. We've got a recruiter as well that can help find that manager. So we try to be a one-stop shop and provide best-in-class services for our clients.
Okay. So now my second one, I'll tell you a little story. And I've told this around here before, guys. So sorry if you heard this before. A few years ago, we were on a long motorhome trip and a bunch of my husband's friends in different states were talking about this tire company that they've been investing in and it's going to be so great. And they're all going to buy, they're buying these franchises. And we're like, we can do that. Let's call them. Let's just call them and see. And so, and it wasn't a terrible startup cost. And we called them and we talked to one of their advisors or what have you. And they spent a really long time telling us like how all of their franchisees, they're so proud of being owners of this company. And they're there at 6 a.m. every day until 7 a.m. the next day. And they never sleep and they're there and they have the vanity plates that say the name of the tire company. And we're like, hell no, that is not what I'm looking to do. I'm happy to, you know, spend some time here and there, but I'm not looking for another job. So my question to you is, are there some, I don't know if you can name brands and like, you know, jump your consulting business, but are there, what types of businesses lend themselves more to that kind of executive partially absentee or even fully absentee owner as opposed to like, oh yeah, you're going to be in there 24 hours a day and you're going to eat, sleep and breathe loving this company.
I love the way you describe that. You know, I'd say 75% of the clients of the franchisors that we work with offer a semi-absentee model. So it would be probably slightly on the majority side. Yeah, that being said, it takes a lot of work to stand up a business. And I try to never sugarcoat it. I want our clients to understand that, hey, it's going to take effort. Even if you put a manager in place, you're still going to have some involvement in the business. The nice thing is in franchising, if you do have a good manager and you're willing to follow the system, that franchisor on the sidelines can carry a lot of that support water day to day. And so your manager is not coming to you for every question. Instead, you're able to keep your job or your main thing, and they're able to go to the franchisor for support. So it is much more doable with a franchise than it is with a startup. But that being said, early on, I want my clients to expect, hey, if you think you're going to be totally hands off, expect to still put in 10 to 15 hours a week early on. And then that starts to curtail back. I mean, look at my example. I don't have a franchise right now that I spend more than 3 hours a week on. But, you know, early on, I was much more hands on. And so, you know, I think it's definitely doable, but it's a path. And someone's got to be willing to roll up their sleeves just a bit. But again, we have doctors all the time that are buying in that aren't quitting their high paying day job. You know, they just want to get another income stream going. So it comes down to having a good manager. You align your incentives and such. Yeah, you know, but it definitely doable. And a lot of our clients go with that semi-passive. There are a couple that offer a truly investor model. I think there are 4 or 5 out there, and we've had some clients buy into those. And that's where the franchisor will actually run the business for you. But I don't talk about this too much just because they are few and far between.
Gotcha. And so what is in your franchise portfolio at the moment?
Yeah, I've got a driveway business. I've got a similar one, but this is more on the B2B side, a concrete paving and line striping business. So it's parking lots, which parking lots everywhere. Again, you can't name a company in that space, right? So it's an opportunity to bring a white glove approach to a very blue collar industry. I still have a small ownership share in a pool cleaning business. That's one that I used to have a larger share, but sold most of it to my partners. I've got a custom orthotics business that opened up this past fall down in South Florida. We're opening up a few locations down there. And they use 3D printing to produce insoles and such. And we cater to a little bit of an older population. So the Boca area is a great area down there. And then I'm invested on the franchisor side with a business called Art of Drawers that is similar to Shelf Genie. It was started by the founder of Shelf Genie. And I helped him get it off the ground. And it's just grown like a weed right now. It's outstanding, a great model. And even though it's an emerging business, you've got a leadership team that has been there, done that. And now it's like version 2.0. So we actually just had a video shoot for that one in my house 2 days ago, but love that little business.
Awesome. Are there any industries or businesses that you get a lot of people who are like, hey, I really want to own a Orange Theory because that's cool. And all my friends are doing Orange Theory right now. And I want to buy an Orange Theory, not necessarily that one specifically, but where everybody's just like, I want to have this because it's cool.
Yeah, I think, people are seeing the need in the market for the men's health area, like I talked about. I'd say fitness. We've done less fitness in the past 2 years. There are a couple that we really like out there, but I'd say there are a lot. They're just too duplicative. I think the market got a little bit crowded. So I'd say on average, we're doing a little bit less there. But the pet space has just boomed. And, COVID caused everyone that didn't have a pet to get a pet, right? And so I think whether it be mobile pet grooming, I always think of Dumb and Dumber every time I say pet grooming, right? But from that to dog training, there's just, again, a lot of different niches in there where there's a need in the market. It's oftentimes not being met well. Yeah, there's really two approaches. There's one, like the custom pull-out shelving that I talked about. That's a small overall market, but they're a very big player in that market. Then there's a lot, let's say painting. And that's a huge market. It's not going anywhere, but there are a lot of players in it. So the key is, can you compete with them? What's your competitive advantage? And has it been proven out in other markets? So two different approaches from when you think about the market dynamics.
Okay. And what do you think is the top thing that makes a new franchise investor, I don't know if it's called that, franchisee, fail?
Yeah. Similar to what I said earlier, I think if you come in and you think you're the smartest guy in the room because you once had a marketing position in corporate America, so you think you're smarter than the marketing team and you want to do things differently, you could spend a lot of money because it's already been optimized for you. So, I think it's not following the system. It's, if you're just a jerk to the people who work for you and jerk to your clients, it's just like any business, you're not going to do well. I think sometimes people can get a little ahead of their skis. And like I said, they underestimate the fact that it is going to take some time of theirs in the business, even with a manager from day one. You can have a great manager, they're still going to need some support. So I think that could be one thing. And we've had very, very few clients fail, but there have been a few. And I'd say those are the key things right there, more on the individual side than on the franchisor support side.
Okay. So it's still pretty common sense business stuff. Like, don't be a jerk to your people. Be somebody that people want to work for. And, all right. That's pretty across the board. So let's talk a little bit about your company, FranBridge Consulting. So what is it exactly that you guys do? And I also want to hear about your book too.
Yeah. I'm essentially a real estate broker, but for franchises. And so my clients never pay me a nickel. If they went directly to a franchise brand or if they go through us, they pay the same franchise fee. So it's a nice clean model. We get a referral fee from the brands, when a placement happens. So similar to real estate. We love working with clients. We jump on a couple of calls with them, get to know them, gather some information. And then I'll come back to them with, hey, here are the top 10 or 12 opportunities in your market that are available across several different industries. And take them through those opportunities and they choose a couple to speak with. And then we kind of hold their hand through the process as they're working with the franchisors. And so it's a lot of fun for us because so many people come in thinking they want one thing, but then when they see real opportunities and they start digging in, they have that light bulb moment and say, wait a minute, actually that one makes a whole lot of sense. So we actually do more placements than anybody else in the country. Last year, I think we placed about 80 clients and just love seeing the success stories and love seeing them come back to buy more locations.
Awesome. So when let's talk about locations too for a minute. So how is that determined? I guess it'll be dependent on the specific industry, like how far away from each other they have to be. What kind of data are they looking at to try and figure that out?
Yeah. So two different types of businesses. One that would be the, a brick and mortar customer facing retail, kind of what you think of, right, as traditional. Oftentimes it's the territory is defined by a radius around that location. The franchisor doesn't expect you to have any background in site selection. They're going to bring in the real estate experts. Typically a local firm partner with their real estate person internally. They're going to look at all the traffic stops and the demographics and help you decide a short list of here are the top three that we recommend, and you kind of work with them then to pick one. And then they do the build out for you. The second would be a service-based business, like some of the examples that we talked about. And that would be defined oftentimes at the zip code level, but zip codes adding up to a territory of, let's say, 250,000, 300,000 in population. And the franchisor has mapping software that has all the demographic information of average household income, blah, blah, blah. So they would work with you on defining those territories. And it is common for people to buy multiple territories out of the gate. You start your marketing efforts in a couple of zip codes of one of them, and then that gives you the path to scale over time.
Okay. Yeah, because I always wonder about this area of Florida that we're in, since you're familiar with it, that it's so, it seems like it would be difficult to do a franchise because there's only 10,000 of us that live in Santa Rosa Beach. I think there's 20,000 in Panama City, and I think there's like 15,000 in Destin. So it's not a huge area in terms of all year round. So when you look at, if you're going to open a business in a place like this and you're looking at, okay, how many people live here? You know, if you're going to open a Walmart, how many people are you servicing? Well, it's actually a lot more than what the data probably shows in terms of full-time residents. So what would be your advice for somebody who lives in a market like this?
Yeah. And I'll certainly say when I've been stuck in traffic down there on 38, it feels like a lot more people than that. No matter where we are in the country, I mean, we have to factor in, is there a seasonality component to the business? And if there is, then what do we do with the employees during the off season? This is much more of a destination where you are, right? Beautiful area down there, but you have a lot of transient people. So what do they need during their stay down there? You know, what is the demographic profile? I know a lot of Atlanta people where I am, you know, do travel down there, and it's a lot of young families. Whereas mm-hmm. I think about Southeast Florida, where I'm invested, it's people from the Northeast, and they come down there for about 6 or 7 months a year. And so you have to kind of plan around that. So there's some variability that comes into play, but you try to look at like kind markets of what's done well in similar markets. Maybe it's in, I don't know, Charleston's probably not a good example. It's much more well-established, but maybe some other beach town in Florida. And would say, hey, you know, I mean, certainly food is relevant there, you know, if you have the right food concept. But then there's a lot of just ongoing services. I mean, you have, think about my businesses, the parking lots. You have parking lots everywhere. You know, there are landlords that need that service. You know, property management, you're going to need that. And so I think when you think about construction, renovations, ongoing, certainly cleaning services, pool cleaning services, there are a lot of different options. So we consider all that when we think about it.
Okay. And to kind of piggyback off of that, and this is my last question before we wrap up and do the last three of the show, what are the steps for selecting an investor, selecting the right franchise or the right type of franchise?
Yeah, typically we would jump on a call together, and I kind of know those leading questions to ask to get the information that we need. And then I'd have them fill out an online profile that just takes a couple of minutes, very high level. We created kind of an executive approach to this. And then the next step would be I'd come out back to them with, hey, here's what I see as the top 10 or 12 opportunities. And I'd walk them through each of these and give them characteristics of the business. And I try to give them a good representation across at least four or five, if not more, industries based on our conversation, based on others with similar backgrounds that I've seen, based on what I know about the market. And, their goal would be to narrow it down to three or four to then have a conversation with. We make those introductions. But all through the process, we can always iterate. If they say, hey, after having a couple of calls, I now want to go deeper with, let's say, restoration companies. You know, I just see a huge need there. I like the idea of insurance footing the bill. How about we take a deep dive into the top three or four restoration businesses for comparison? So we can iterate as they gain more knowledge and it starts to build this framework in their mind of what it is they're looking for.
Okay. Awesome. Well, this is really, really fascinating stuff. I'm definitely going to pick up your book. And I think listeners should as well. So we're to the last three questions of the show that we ask everyone. These are a little more fun. So what advice, first one, what advice would you give 20-year-old John if you knew then what you know now?
Yeah, looking back, you know, I'm thankful that I spent many years in the corporate world. And, you know, I think I got some good experience, but yeah, I probably would have made the jump a little bit sooner to the entrepreneurial world. So I would have started preparing early on. I've never once looked back and would have loved to have jumped even earlier.
A lot of people say that, myself included. And what advice would you give to a new, we normally say short-term rental investor, but I'm going to say entrepreneur today. What advice would you give to a new entrepreneur who in early 2024 is interested in getting started in today's kind of weird market?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, take a step back, take a deep breath. Don't put too much pressure on yourself, but, you know, really think about what it is you want to do in the short term, but also long term. I think if you have that end in mind, as Stephen Covey talks about, then it allows you to, you know, think more clearly and focus in today on what steps and what decisions do I need to take now to set me up for where I want to be. So I love counseling young folks. Oftentimes earlier in their career, we'll go out for coffee and I just share some thoughts. And again, my goal is to take the pressure off of them and just help them build a roadmap of where it is they want to go and what that next step makes, would best lead them there.
Awesome. I'm calling Luke after this, my husband. We're going to make an appointment because we thought about this like in 2022, but the real estate market was just so nuts. We just couldn't keep up with anything. And there was no starting anything new then. Anyway, it's not about me. Last question. What is your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
Gosh, I like a lot of them. There's one I read last year, Buy Back Your Time and Die With Zero. Highly recommend those. Those have gotten me thinking. But, you know, if I had to pick one, I'd say The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. It's the idea of, you know, little investments over time lead up to big things, not just from a financial standpoint, but your investments in time with your family. It's investments in your health. If you skip a day at the gym, it's not going to make a big difference. If you skip a lot of days, it's going to start to be cumulative over time. So love the idea of, again, just taking those steps and, you know, ultimately you'll wake up one day and realize you're where you want to be.
Yeah. Well, don't we all want to do that? Well, John, thank you so much for coming on. If our listeners want to find you and follow you, maybe schedule an appointment, how do they do that?
Yeah, certainly. So I'd say certainly we put out a lot of content on LinkedIn. That's our favorite social platform. But come out to our website, franbridgeconsulting.com, franbridgeconsulting.com, which I'm sure will be linked to in the show notes. We'd love to share a copy of our book, a free copy with everyone, you know, that you can download audio or PDF. And then certainly if you want to buy the book on Amazon, you know, physical copy, all the proceeds go to a great nonprofit that we support, Hope International. So I want to give a plug for them. But yeah, we'd love to engage, again, entirely free to work with us. And we love helping people just like your listeners.
All right. Well, thank you again, John, so much for coming on, and we will catch you later.